WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Libby Gelman-Waxner isn't shy about stating she is America's foremost auteurist film critic. But before she became a columnist for Premier Magazine, taking on the daunting task of molding the tastes of a nation, she claims she was just an average American filmgoer, leaving her charmingly eclectic home in search of naked movie stars, exploding squad cars, and a good look at Cher's latest surgical procedure. Not all of her readers know that she is really the creation of humorist, playwright, and screenwriter Paul Rudnick. His credits include the film Adam's Family Values and the play Jeffrey, a comedy about love in the age of AIDS. Libby's film columns have been collected in the new book, If You Ask Me. We invited Paul Rudnick to share some of Libby's insights into contemporary cinema. First, to introduce us to Libby, he'll read from the introduction of her new collection.
5 years ago, when Premier Magazine first begged me to become their in-house film critic and ultimate auteurist authority, I had to ask myself, Libby, you already have it all. What do you need this for? As my devoted readers know, I am an extremely successful assistant buyer in Junior's activewear. Every year, I help decide exactly which Calvin Klein silk charmeuse slip dress will tempt our customers into having enough surgery to be able to wear it. I also have two perfect children, my daughter Jennifer and my little Mitchell Sean. Motherhood is a 24-hour-a-day job. Just ask my housekeeper and my two nannies, but let's leave the au pair out of this, because that navel ring is making me very nervous, even on a Wellesley girl. Especially on a Wellesley girl. And of course, I am also devoted to my flawless husband Josh, who is not only a wildly sought-after Upper East Side orthodontist, whose clientele includes the children of many celebrities' attorneys, but who can also balance a light beer, two different bags of chips, three remote controls, the TV guide, the latest John Grisham, a cellular phone, and a Master Blaster water pistol to keep the cat and the kids away from the chips, all on a single arm of his recliner. With all this in my life, plus the Stairmaster, which I use backwards without holding onto the handrails, thank you very much, how could I make room to mold the film going of a nation? Why did I decide to do it? To offer my nuggets of auteuristic insight every month in the pages of a magazine which never contains enough perfume strips? The answer is you. Yes, I did it for you, the wonderful, loving, dedicated, ignorant American Cineplex addict. I do it because I love you. Every one of you. Even the ones who actually pretend to enjoy French movies about the ambiguity of love at the beach. Or any French movies at all. Or any movies that aren't in color or in English, for that matter. I do it because I can hear America crying out, saying, please, Libby, tell us what you think. Guide us. Help us understand the differences between the various Baldwin brothers. Heal us. I am here for America and the world, to wonder if in just a few years our preschools will be filled with toddlers named Merrill, Glenn, Macaulay, Christian, and Winona. I am here to say yes. Do not be ashamed. Join with me. Let us all gather as one and shout, take us, Harrison Ford, and bring Tommy Lee Jones with you. Both of you, take us now.
Paul Rudnick, why did you create Libby Gelman-Waxner?
Well, I felt the last thing the world needed was another actual breathing film critic. I think there are far too many as it is, but perhaps the world needed Libby, needed someone who didn't censor their film-going responses, but just immediately said, oh, I want to buy, I want to date, I want to wear. So that's how she goes to the movies, as if it's all just a giant catalog.
Is she based on people that you know?
Well, she's based on myself in part, on women I know, on everyone. I think she's the child in us that goes to the movies and the adult child who just, I guess, goes to the movies as not just an escape, but as a way of planning our own lives, who rather than saying, oh, I'm at an artistic event and I will analyze and critique, they go to think, ah, wouldn't that be a great apartment in Woody Allen's Manhattan? Or, ooh, you know, if I were Mel Gibson, I wouldn't marry Diane Keaton in Mrs. Sofol, or whatever their response is, it's on a very personal level. I think that's, actually, that was probably what gave birth to Libby, was that sense of, oh, Americans especially taking movies so much to heart, not treating them as if there's any dividing line between their own lives and that and what they're watching on the screen.
Has Libby seen Little Women?
Yes, she did, which she enjoyed very much because she felt it verged on Merchant Ivory. She felt that it was the kind of film that made you just want to be a nice young white girl at the turn of the century. I think it was, it actually is a beautifully made movie, but it had that kind of real glamour satisfaction in that the fancier the actress was, the more she was allowed to wear eye makeup. And the fact that Winona Ryder was being treated as if she was the plain little woman. And yes, that she was the one who somehow would be forced into a career as a writer because she couldn't nab a guy. And I thought, well, that's satisfying that it's Winona Ryder the way in the earlier film it was Katharine Hepburn. Somehow you think, no, this isn't exactly, you know, a plain Jane situation.
Susan Sarandon's part as the mother, in which she's always just so self-sacrificing and making speeches about womanhood to her daughters, really reminded me of the Susan Sarandon who accepts Academy Awards and makes speeches about the political issue of the day.
Well, she also had what both Libby and I agree was one of the most viciously maternal lines in film history, which is towards the end of the film, Winona inherits a huge, gorgeous New England mansion. And Marmee, played by Susan Sarandon, kind of breezes past Winona and says, well, you know, the house is really too big for anyone to live in, but wouldn't it make a marvelous school? And you think, no, it would make a wonderful house. But somehow, because they're transcendentalists and because they believe in goodness, you know that Winona is suddenly condemned to running a school. And it just seemed like something that Libby or perhaps my own relatives would say. You know that, oh, well, that's a lovely outfit, dear, but you're not leaving the house, are you? It just was, I guess, that moment at which guilt was introduced to New England.
What did Libby's mother think of Little Women?
Well, Libby's mother is Sandra Krell Gelman, who is much beloved and not only is a full-time mom, but also works in real estate at Lovely Spaces, Inc. on Great Neck, Long Island. But so I think she would also approve of Little Women because Susan Sarandon was, you know, both a marvelous mother and, even though the family was supposed to be rather poor, seemed to have plenty of live-in help. That even when the girls were running off to give their one last potato to the poor family in the neighborhood, the potato had been prepared by a live-in cook. So this strikes me as the ideal form of charity. Charity with an apron that works for you.
Pulp Fiction, have you seen it?
Has Libby seen it? Oh, yes. We went together because Libby relishes a good violent film. She sees it as a terrific catharsis. She's, you know, all in favor of people getting blown away, although she'd prefer that they be kind of sloppy dry cleaners or nasty cab drivers or her least favorite relatives, but they're rarely often films. So she makes do with having John Travolta shot at point blank range.
Did she pick up any cleaning tips from Harvey Keitel in his role as the Wolf, who advises the trigger man how to clean blood off the back seat of their expensive car?
Well, Libby, of course, didn't really learn anything, but she did send Mrs. Ramirez, her beloved housekeeper, and a real gem, to see what she could learn.
My guest is humorist, screenwriter, and playwright Paul Rudnick. He created the character of Libby Gilman Waxner, film critic for Premier Magazine. There's a new collection of Libby's columns called If You Ask Me. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with humorist Paul Rudnick. He writes a satirical film review column under the name Libby Gilman Waxner. Does Libby ever go to the movies and try to guess who's gay?
Libby feels that that someday will be part of interactive film going, just as there'll be that home shopping window that will appear in the corner of the screen allowing you to purchase whatever Julia Roberts is wearing. There'll be perhaps another little check or maybe a pink triangle that will appear in the upper corner of the screen when a gay actor appears. So, although I think it's funny, I know Libby and I have had conversations about this. There's such panic in Hollywood over whether people would, overall, the mass audience would be able to relate to actors they knew were gay if they were portraying heterosexual characters. I don't know. Somehow people haven't stopped renting Rock Hudson films. You know, I think it may be a non-issue, or at least it's certainly an issue that hasn't begun to be explored. You know, we've had now plenty of heterosexual actors playing gay roles, and that's been very accepted. But I think, you know, wouldn't it be nice to maybe give that mass audience the benefit of the doubt for once and see what would happen?
Hasn't it become kind of a sport to sit around guessing who's gay?
Oh, yes. Well, I think the ideal situation is to assume they all are, you know, and whittle from there. Because after all, you know, I somehow the division of people into gay and straight or into tough guy, real man, not a real man, gets awfully silly once you're dealing with people making $12 million to, you know, kiss Sharon Stone.
Tell us something about Libby's best friend and often, screening companion, Stacey Schiff.
Well, Stacey is actually usually referred to as the still tragically single Stacey Schiff. Stacey is just, she's a marketing analyst and lives in hope and despair, as do so many, I think, single gals in New York. So she does attend films with Libby and they analyze marriage possibilities for Stacey, whether, you know, how long will the Baldwin-Basinger marriage last? Should she settle for a lesser Baldwin brother? Is there any hope of breaking up Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan? You know, so Libby feels that films can help Stacey, and she's, you know, hopes for her, but, oh, it doesn't look good.
When Libby goes to the movies, one of the things she looks for is the tush factor. What is it?
The tush factor is how many times a desirable tush is exposed. That Mel Gibson seems to have it written into his contract that especially when he plays an action hero, like in the Lethal Weapon films, there has to be a scene in which he rises from his early morning bed, takes a sip of coffee or perhaps grabs a towel, and we get a major glimpse. So she, and Libby's very disappointed, in fact, outraged when the tush factor is denied. Although, as with Michael Douglas, perhaps the tush factor should have a freshness date on it.
Does Libby suspect that perhaps that is merely a stunt tush?
A
tush double?
Well, I think I think male actors are far more vain about their bodies and nudity than actresses are. I think actresses often much prefer a body double to sub for them, but male actors like to say, yes, I've worked out for, 3 hours before filming, and I want everybody to get a good long look at this, sack of guts. So I think it's very rare that it's someone else, not Richard Gere.
You know, I have a friend who called me up and said, did you know that Paul Rudnick wrote the screenplay for The Santa Claus? And I thought, no, wow, God, he must be wealthy beyond all belief now. And think how proud his mother would be that he'd have the number one film. And of course, it's Steve Rudnick, not Paul Rudnick.
Sadly, although I don't know if my mother would approve of my doing such a goyish work. But yes, I know it's very sad because Steve Rudnick, who as far as I know, I'm not related to, and I wish him well. I just wish some of his checks would find their way to me. In fact, I did get a call from the Screenwriters Guild about an arbitration for the credits of another film that I had nothing to do with. And they got a little huffy, and it suddenly occurred to me. I said, I bet you're looking for Steve Rudnick, the rich Rudnick. So who knows? I'm hoping for some confusion in the future.
What will your next screenplay be? Do you know?
Well, I'm working on a film for Paramount right now that I'm in the middle of. So that I sort of won't discuss because I'm wildly superstitious. And often when I describe something I'm working on, I listen to myself and go, oh, that sounds horrible. Stop now. So I'll leave that one be. But I also have the film of Jeffrey, of my last play, will be out in May.
Oh, did you write the screenplay?
Yes, I did. And we shot it all on location in New York this past summer over a 5-week period. And it was, pretty much a labor of love, I think, for everyone concerned, because God knows no one was making much money on it. But we got just the best cast. Patrick Stewart from Star Trek is in it, and Sigourney Weaver, and Kathy Najimy, Olympia Dukakis, Steven Weber, who's on Wings. So just the greatest cast. And Christopher Ashley, who directed the play on stage, is directing it as a movie.
Great. Yeah, and Jeffrey is your comedy about AIDS.
Yes.
Do you have a cameo for yourself?
It depends. Well, cameo is already far too generous a term. There is an actual split second where if you know me incredibly well, you would be able to spot me. It's in the big gay Gay Pride Day sequence in which I am holding some sort of picket sign. So the very careful viewer will be able to spot me.
Paul Rudnick writes satirical film criticism under the name Libby Gilman Waxner in Premier Magazine. There's a new collection of Libby's columns called If You Ask Me. This is Fresh Air.